From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it is T-Bone Steak, Tomahawk Steak Thursday. We should be having first hour joining us, author of The Carnivore Diet, Dr. Sean Baker, to talk all things meat. And then second hour, Libby Handros and John Kirby of the producers, directors of the amazing film series, Four Died Trying. I was talking about the prologue when it came out and lauding it. And now it's so cool to be able to have them on the show. They just released the next part in the series, which is chapter one. You can go to their Patreon to view it. I can't because I'm banned from Patreon. If you've noticed, I've got a little bit of a red eye. I don't know what's going on there, sand or contacts or something. That is what's going on. No shady stuff. What's happening on the planet? Justin Amash, who's running again for office, I think in Michigan, for Senate, he tweets, "A digital currency administered by a massive central government is one of the most dangerous developments in history. Finance must be decoupled from the state and decentralized. When the state can turn off your ability to transact with the switch, it controls your whole existence." The Intercept published a fascinating piece yesterday by Trevor Aronson, who I've had on my podcast, titled "The FBI's Double Agent, the Informant at the Heart of the Gretchen Whitmer Kidnapping Plot." Again, that was in Michigan. And he and his co-authors say the Whitmer kidnapping case followed a pattern familiar from hundreds of previous FBI counterterror stings that have targeted Muslims in the post 9/11 era. Those cases raised questions about whether the crimes could have happened at all without the prodding of undercover agents and informants. Thank you, Intercept, for that, Captain Obvious. Hello, McFly. That's like what many of us were saying from day one. It's quite obvious, but the data has finally caught up to our conspiracy theory that the plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan was nothing more than an FBI false flag operation. How is our government legitimate anymore? I don't understand. You may have heard the news already that there's a bill in California that would let illegal aliens receive the same kind of home buyer assistance as U.S. citizens. People are complaining, objecting to granting perks to people who have broken the law and entered the country illegally. Try doing something like this in any other country except for United States of America. Customers are pulling their cash from New York Community Bank, but it's no bank run. War is peace. Ignorance is strength, or is it bliss? Bank run is not a bank run. I mean, seriously, the Orwellian nature says the customers of New York Community Bank pulled $6 billion worth of deposits over last month. From February 5th to March 5th, they pulled $6 billion dollars of deposits, leaving the bank's deposit base 7% lower. So within the span of a month, 7% less deposits. But it's not a bank run. It's not a bank run. We're arming Ukraine with all sorts of weapons and they're hitting inside of Russian territory. It's not a war. It's not a war. It's totally not a war. Totally not a bank run. Totally not the FBI pretending to kidnap the governor of Michigan. Was it Leslie Nielsen in Naked Gun? It's like that. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. BRICS Bank of America issues warning of a U.S. dollar collapse. The U.S. national debt is now growing by $1 trillion every 100 days. Being reported that the uncontrolled debt could lead to a financial disaster, wreaking havoc not only in the U.S., but across the world. Yes, we are waiting for the shoe to drop. Ray Dalio, speaking of money, billionaire. When he speaks, I tend to listen. May not totally agree, but someone of his stature, you want to sort of hear what he has to say. And he says that it is a time when the domestic order is on the brink of civil war. when there are irreconcilable differences over wealth and values, when there are win-at-all-cost fights for power. He says that basically it's a time that is both threatening and classic, which he talks about in his book. It's a classic cycle we're going through. He says 2024 will be an interesting stress test year that will affect the whole world in big ways. Thank you for that, Ray Dalio. Also being reported, you know, Thomas Massie brought this up. Newsweek has mentioned it. Now, maybe I can ask my hour one guest about this plan to track cows raises alarm bells with Republicans. A passage in an omnibus bill, which includes $15 million to electronically track livestock, raises alarms with Republicans. And I do recall now Thomas Massie tweeted about that. He said that essentially what's going on here is that this is effectively central bank digital currency for livestock. That's what Thomas Massie says. Also, again, the agenda continues. Financial Times, they're one of the ones leading this propaganda narrative. They published a story today. Can Europe's trains compete with low-cost airlines? Again, the agenda to do away with planes. And they basically said, they said that many aviation executives worry they will face growing regulatory scrutiny if they are not seen to be making progress in decarbonization. One investor in airports acknowledges, everyone does realize this industry is doomed unless there is a clear plan to achieve net zero. So the airline industry is doomed, exactly what the Great Reset crowd want. But we must fight back. Did you know there are many ways you can watch or listen to TNT? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, laptop, tablet, or mobile device? You can download our app to your surveillance device, to your smartphone from the app stores. We're streaming live on X, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
On Wednesday, the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, unveiled the country's first self-service screening system. It's a lot of S's. In a popular Las Vegas airport, and some frustrated flyers have compared it to the annoying self-checkout at grocery stores. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Harbori. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong here? This is interesting. This is at, Harry Reid. Harry Reid International Airport. Ding, ding, ding. There we go. So the morning TV shows all over network TV were showing this off. They billed it as the future of airport security. One dude from CBS Mornings tested it out and literally said it reminded him of the self-checkout at the grocery store. So yeah, that's fun. And I think there was a traveler, who got tried it on Wednesday, according to the Sun, was frustrated after the machine flagged her hair clip and she was complaining, quote, "My hair clip, are you serious? Normally I wouldn't have a hiccup. I don't like getting scanned four or five times," end quote. So, you know, we'll see how this goes. The new self-checkout lane, it looks a lot like the existing security you may already be familiar with. At airports across America, there are bins for your belongings, which run along a conveyor belt, and backscatter x-ray machines. Aren't those fun to scan your body? The innovation with these new self-checkout lanes appears to be the absence of large numbers of TSA agents who typically explain things. NBC reporter Tom Costello explained on the Today Show on Wednesday, quote, "If you have any questions, simply ask the TSA officer on demand," end quote. Costello explains that TSA officers, quote, "will dial in remotely," end quote, though it's not clear if the officers are on site at the airport or potentially thousands of miles away. Whatever the answer, passengers then walk into a body imaging machine, holding their arms down to the side rather than above as the computer scans for any potential weapons. Or in the case of the aforementioned woman who had to walk through four or five times, for any hair clips. The goal appears to be removing as many TSA officers, from the process as possible. Though there will still be agents around to conduct any, you know, friendly pat downs that they deem necessary. Or as the TSA themselves put it in a press release on Wednesday, quote, the aim is to provide a near self-sufficient passenger screening process while enabling passengers to directly receive on-person alarm information and allow for the passenger self-resolution of those alarms to reduce instances where a pat-down or secondary screening procedure would be necessary, end quote. After the screening process is done, but only after, automated exit doors open up and travelers can then make their way to their gates. And much like the self-checkout machines at places like Target and your local grocery store, the idea seems to be, as Gizmodo puts it, to turn us all into cashiers, or in this case, into our own security agents. And you can theoretically get to see how fewer TSA staff would be necessary if more of the process was automated and humans only needed to get involved when there's a problem or worry. But how long before the problem gets taken care of automatically too? What do you think?
You know, when I meant I don't want the TSA anymore, this is not what I meant. As he said, you know, careful what you wish for, replacing the TSA with technocracy. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind when I see these images, Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger, automated cattle management, you know, like turnstiles on the farm. And all of this just makes me want to fly less. You know, I went to Acapulco recently. It was so wonderful here in Mexico, flying nationally. You don't got to take your shoes off. You pass through security like this. In an hour, I'm in Acapulco. Life is nice. And I mentioned before, I've been invited to Ron Paul's house next month, being a former sponsor. And I don't even know, you know, this security theater is so much so annoying for me that I might just not go to, pass up on that invite. But no, this is it's how do I, if I want to opt out from the thing, you know, normally when you say, I've done that a couple times, not to go through the scanner, you get the pat down, you know, what happens if you're in a rush? It's insane dealing with these technocratic systems. If you're in a rush, there's no human there to help you. You might lose your flights. I generally just don't like the way this is going, Ruckus, and we're seeing what they're doing with the border as well. The smart border that they're creating with drones and AI and cameras and little technological outposts that are going to surveil everything. So what do you make of these new TSA developments?
You were saying about like you might miss your flight. It could be worse than that. What happens if like you're inside the booth thing and then it just refuses to let you out, or power goes out, or hackers, you know, cyber polygon happens and you're stuck inside one of those things? It's terrible. But I hope I'm kidding when I suggest that. What, how long before they take care of the problem? I mean, if you're locked in there, does that mean if they find a gun, you're stuck in there until a real human being comes to disarm you? I mean, this is just, I have so many questions. And it looks absolutely frightening, and it's scary. As you said, the people are doing it to themselves. It's a completely different dystopian look than watching the TSA agents do it. This one's got an extra creepy feel to it. So I suggest people watch, you know, look at some photos, because it's weird.
You know, and you know, people will lap this up. I spoke with Doc Malik not long ago, who's been banned from practicing as a doctor in the UK just for thought crimes. And he said people will lap this sort of stuff up, comfort and the apps and all these sorts of things. You know, Washington Post also discusses this story. It says pre-check passengers can try the new tech in its testing phase. And I thought about for a second signing up for the TSA pre-check or whatever program, global something. And then I read horror stories that people who had actually signed up and been approved, they ended up being like interrogated, denied. And I'm like, I mean, again, you can find those articles online. That's how the Kafkaesque system is. You sign up, you pay more to be part of the premium and thinking you're going to be whisked through faster. No, you're whisked into the interrogation room or the machine doesn't work. And so again, the 1985 film Brazil, this is what I feel like. And again, what happens when the social credit system comes in? They'll compare all the data that they have on you and say, you know what? The way I don't like your tweet yesterday, we're not going to let you pass. Any final thought, Ruckus?
Yeah, the screening process will involve a lot more than just checking for weapons. Very soon, it'll be checking your thoughts. It might want to read your Neuralink chip and know exactly what you were thinking about this morning before you headed on over to that airport. Or maybe you twitched the wrong way, or there's an extra bead of sweat on your forehead. That's a problem.
Just like in the movies. All right, Ruckus. Catch up with you in a bit. We've got the awesome Dr. Sean Baker joining us. Carnivore.diet is his website. The book Carnivore Diets and Rivero.com will help you improve your health. He'll be right with us after the break.
TNT's Steve Malzberg.
When I stepped aside, they said she stepped aside, but she's still here. When he stepped aside, end of an era. It's a guy thing, I know. But I have to just say, for women, we want our proper attention too.
That is the most narcissistic thing I've seen since Barack Obama. This is about Mitch McConnell. And you're bringing up that he got too much credit or you got too little credit when you stepped down? That they called Mitch's reign and the end of it, the end of an era? And nobody said that about you? Nobody said that about you? You kidding me?
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk. TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7, your news talk giant, TNT.
All right, joining us is Dr. Sean Baker. He's a lifelong multi-sport elite level athlete, medical doctor who served as a combat trauma surgeon and chief of orthopedics while deployed to Afghanistan with the U.S. Air Force. And he's been focusing on nutrition as a tool for health, performance, and overall well-being. I love his book. I'm reading it now on Kindle, the Carnivore Diet, the website carnivore.diet. He's got hilarious Twitter X account, Instagram, Rivero.com, as well as his other website. And he's been a guest on Joe Rogan. Thank you for joining us on TNT.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk to the folks over on the other side of the world. So good to be here.
Yeah. And you're doing great work that's helping a lot of people. I noticed in your book, you said you grew up in Chicago. I'm from Chicago too, North Side, Skokie, Morton Grove place, so small world. And you know, maybe to start, to look at, I guess, the elephant in the room, can we call it the medical system? It's failing everyone everywhere. In your book, you discuss how you went up against it, you had some troubles, and if you want to tell us, you know, briefly your thoughts on what's wrong with the big pharma, the medical industrial complex.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're just incentivized the wrong way. I mean, you know, again, I'm speaking primarily the U.S. system, but you're seeing that being exported across the world. You know, I mean, even in Australia, their corporations are buying up healthcare systems, and so you kind of fall into line. There's a corporate model which is Medicaid, technology, and a lot of profit derived from that. And unfortunately, it doesn't often result in good patient outcomes. And while you can, you know, decrease some symptoms and stuff, you rarely ever are incentivized to tackle the root cause of disease. You know, when you go to the doctor and say, well, why do I have this problem? And most of the time they shrug their shoulders. They say, I don't know. Maybe it's genetics, bad luck. And that's not a good place to start from, because if you don't even know why you know, a chronic condition is occurring, then how do you actually treat it? I mean, I know how to treat the symptoms. You know, I went to medical school, which was funded by, in large part, pharmaceutical industries. I got my, you know, the drug representatives gave me my first free pizzas and pens, and, you know, they sent me to conferences, and you know, as a surgeon, every time I operate, I had somebody from industry in the OR with me just about every single case. They're constantly in your office. All the continuing medical education you get is sponsored by the pharmaceutical company. So we have a of the healthcare system by these corporations, which, you know, make enormous profits on this. And so that's what we're seeing. And we're seeing, you know, this continued belief that things like obesity, things like diabetes, they're nothing that you've done or could have done. It's all just chance and bad luck and genetics. And the only solution is some, you know, the latest drug. And those drugs are getting more and more expensive, by the way, particularly in the United States. And, you know, I mean, it's almost as if they're trying to get people to believe that they have a deficiency of some pharmaceutical and that's why they're sick, where, you know, nothing farther from the truth could be true. You know, it's clearly what we're eating and what we're exposed to environmentally.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm loving your book. It's funny. It's easy to read. And right away, I'm eating more meat. And you're also funny for, there's a lot of hilarious clips that you do. And I wanted to play one that sort of speaks to the insanity of Big Pharma and Big Agra, where, you know, where they said cereal, let them eat cereal, basically, right? Let them eat cake, let them eat cereal. Let's play this clip real quick.
Some of the things that we're doing is, first, messaging. We got to reach the consumer where they are. So we're advertising about cereal for dinner. If you think about the cost of cereal for a family versus what they might otherwise do, that's going to be much more affordable.
I'm all for innovation and marketing, but the idea of having cereal for dinner, is there the potential for that to land the wrong way?
We don't think so. In fact, it's landing really well right now, Carl. When we look at all of our data, of course, we would know that breakfast cereal is the number one choice for in-home consumption. We understand that for breakfast. It turns out that over 25% of our consumption is outside the breakfast occasion. A lot of it's at dinner, and that occasion continues to grow, as well as the snacking occasion. But cereal for dinner is something that is probably more on trend now, and we would expect to continue as that consumer is under pressure.
TNT Radio News.
This is news.
Here we go.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Fulton County Board of Ethics has canceled a hearing scheduled to address two complaints against Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, stating that it lacks jurisdiction over the matter. Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has announced a $230 million investment in money-saving technology to speed up police response times during his budget speech on Wednesday. One of the key initiatives is a pilot scheme using drones as first responders, which could be rolled out across the country if successful.
On air
and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're talking to Dr. Sean Baker, the website carnivore.diet. Check out the book Carnivore Diet. I think it will help you be healthier. And we were looking at that clip with that one of the, I guess, Kellogg's people telling us to eat cereal while you're eating a big, fat, not nice, juicy steak. And in your book, I think you also talk about Kellogg and cereals. And your book focuses as well on, you know, meat. More beef means more life and basically less farts. There was a chart where you mentioned where countries that ate more meat tend to have a higher rate of longevity, and that you fart less as well. So, tell us about the work you've been doing on the carnivore diet.
Yeah, well, I've been one of the world's leading advocates for this style of eating more meat. I think meat is clearly a health food. I think it's been inappropriately demonized for perhaps nefarious reasons. I think when we get away from animal source food, we consume more of this processed food. And that the CEO of Kellogg's is a perfect example of that. Maybe you can't afford to have hamburger for dinner, so let's have, you know, basically nutritionally devoid junk for dinner. You know, cereal, they have to fortify the stuff even to make it even barely nutritious. I've been doing this for many, many years now. We continue to see people putting diabetes, mental health disorders, autoimmune diseases, inflammatory diseases into complete remission by consuming a diet that is primarily made up of meat, and in some cases exclusively meat. So that in itself is quite interesting. We continue to see this tremendous push to get meat out of the diet. You know, I know in Australia they're talking about, you know, reducing the amount of each meat you eat. There's this continued push that it's dangerous for the environment. It's not healthy. It's not sustainable. That is all. I mean, they say that there's some sort of altruistic reason for this, but the reality is it's just about creating, you know, market share and having you spend more money on food that's not going to make you healthy. It's going to make you sicker. And so zero long-term randomized trials with health outcomes that show that meat causes cancer, heart disease, diabetes, or anything else. Is all inferred from extremely weak epidemiologic data, you know, animal studies, mechanistic data, none of which is strong science. And so they're taking this really poor evidence and giving more import to it than it's actually there. And, you know, the biggest way to counter that is, what happens when you eat a bunch of meat? Well, you stop eating junk and you get healthier. And I think it's clear to me, these issues that we have today didn't exist 50, 75, 100 years ago to the degree they do now. And our consumption of particularly red meat in the United States since the 1970s, red meat consumption is down almost 40%. And yet disease continues to grow and grow, obesity rates skyrocketing, and Australia's not far behind us. They're heading in the same direction, probably with the same trends with meat consumption.
Yeah, and in your book, you mentioned Mongolia. You're right. Traditional rural Mongolians have been routinely noted to consume 10 pounds of meat in one sitting, and a few together can consume an entire sheep in a single day. And I've lived in Mongolia. I was a Peace Corps Mongolia volunteer. I lived in the Gobi in a yurt, and I witnessed what you wrote about. Sometimes I'd help them dismember a lamb or a sheep, and you look at, as you do in your book, you look at the societies, and in Mongolia, we ate mostly, you know, meat and dairy. There's vegetables few and far between, especially in the desert. And I'm more and more convinced of what you talk about, that having, you know, eating meat basically being the basis for your diet. I think in the book you talk about weight loss, getting rid of diabetes, just so many issues that you do away with. No,
absolutely. Yeah, it's fairly clear. I mean, I think it's, you know, there was a study Harvard University did back in 2021 looking at a little over 2,000 people on the diet. And of the diabetics, they had a couple hundred diabetics in there. 92% of them were able to come off their insulin, you know, these type 2 diabetics. You know, 100% of them came off all other injectable diabetes medications, and 84% of them came off all their oral medications, you know. So this is very powerful. I mean, there's very little interventions that are even close to this. So clearly, I think we've been sort of sold a belief system that's completely wrong. I mean, we've been demonizing meat if we look at the creation of the U.S. dietary or nutrition science, the American Dietetics Association was founded way back in 1917 by Seventh-day Adventist vegetarian, you know, religious believers that felt that everybody should be vegetarian. So we've had this sort of anti-meat sentiment since, you know, for at least 100 years. And it's based in religion, some of it's based on profit. But clearly it's not working well. You don't have to go very far to find a lot of sick people that are often consuming, you know, they're told they're eating their fruits and vegetables, and maybe they have a couple eggs and maybe a skinny piece of chicken and a lot of refined carbohydrates and grain-based diets, which clearly are not working well. You know, as a human species, we started agriculture roughly around 10,000 years ago when we started, you know, growing wheat for consumption. Our population, our individual health has gone down tremendously since that time. Prior to that, we were taller, we had larger brains, we had more robust skeletons, we had better dental health. And since the dawn of agriculture, unfortunately, we've just gotten sicker and sicker. And the primary agricultural food is grain, and I think grains are generally problematic.
And you talk about you answer a lot of questions in your book, which is why I very much like it. And I've sort of been, my diet's been balanced for, you know, veggies and meat, but God made bananas and apples and spinach for a reason. No, what are your thoughts on vegetables in general? You know, can we balance it, or is just, you know, should we just forget them and go with meat?
Well, I mean, to be completely fair, God didn't make most of the vegetables we consume today. We made them. You know, you think about it, most of the modern vegetables today were cultivated and changed dramatically from what they would have grown wild back even a few thousand years ago. But beyond that, I think that clearly meat is probably the should be the main focus of the nutrition. Can you add to that without harm? In many cases, yes. I mean, there's obviously people are omnivores. People have been eating fruits and vegetables for quite a while. But there are clearly people where the exclusion of those foods is tremendously helpful. And so I think if someone is not sick, metabolically healthy, they probably have a little bit more leeway. Unfortunately, at least in the United States, a majority of the population at this point is somewhat sick, either metabolically, suffering from autoimmune disease, suffering from an inflammatory condition. So in that situation, you know, those people may do best by just, you know, just dialing it down as close as possible to a meat-based diet. But there are clear, you know, I see it every day, people that are on healthy, balanced diet, not a bunch of junk food, not a bunch of refined, not a bunch of sugar, not a bunch of processed foods. And even though they're eating a healthy diet, they still get better by dropping these other plant foods, which is interesting to see.
Do you ever get, you know, I love steak. You talk about ribeye a lot. I'm down here. I live in Mexico, and I can just order from the grill down the street a kilo of ribeye, freshly grilled. They bring it to me, and I recently discovered picanha, which is amazing. The cut of steak, but I get tired of eating it every day. You know, do you ever get tired of it? And are other variations of meats any, you know, more or less, you know, pork, lamb, chicken, camel, horse?
Yeah, they're all acceptable. I mean, they're all fine. I think the one value that beef tends to have above some of these, some other types of meat, whether chicken or horse, I've not had camel before, but it's just the fat content. You know, when you are excluding carbohydrates from your diet, you got to get energy from somewhere, and proteins are not a particularly good way to get energy. So you have to have enough fat in there. So like a ribeye steak or other fattier cuts of meat tend to fill that bill. And I actually had picanha for lunch today. So it is, as you know, is a really nice cut. It's kind of a Brazilian cut, I suppose, but it's a top sirloin with the fat cap left on there. But yeah, there's, you know, I mean, it, you know, any kind of meat, any fish, eggs, some people are able to include dairy on this. It just depends, you know, limited spices to just for variety's sake. Yeah, I mean, there are literally thousands of ways you can prepare meat and different cuts and different types of meat you can consume, you know, shrimp, seafood, scallops, gosh, anything. There's lots of them.
I want to go back to what you mentioned earlier. You know, often on my show and on TNT, we talk about the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum, all these insane plans that they have for us. And before getting further into that, I wanted to play, we got another clip of you watching a Bill Gates video. Let's roll that.
That's great. Agricultural emissions are one of the most difficult to get rid of. People have come up with alternative foods, but what we're seeing is that it's hard to get more than a small market share. And those foods just don't taste the same. Savers made an advance in the chemistry. It's ultra different in terms of the environmental footprint, but it's as good as those real animal fats.
At Savor, we've been really excited to explore a new technical approach to making food that does not require vast amounts of land or animal suffering. It doesn't, you know, produce greenhouse gases. It's a totally non-agricultural method for producing food. The fats that Savor makes are made by a thermochemical process. They are the only foods in the world so far that are made entirely without photosynthesis.
That's great. Oh, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that wasn't
bad. Bill Gates is working on fake butter, fake meat. You know, even here in Mexico at the Starbucks, they're now, instead of the chicken sandwich, it's the fake chicken sandwich, like literally fake sausage biscuit muffins. And you know, in the U.S., there's a bill that they want to pass, which talks about electronically tracking livestock now. And I'm sure you've heard, you know, a lot of the plans they want for us. No more flying on planes, no more cars, no more eating meat. And I've had people say, this is like neo-feudalism, where you can keep the serfs or plebs weaker by not eating meat. And in your book, you talk about how traditionally it was the wealthy upper class that had access to meat. Your further thoughts on some of these insane ideas our political elites have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the biggest thing that scares me about quote unquote climate change is the crazy reactions that people want to do. I mean, he's talking about blocking out the sun with some particulate matter sprayed in the air and these crazy schemes. I mean, when he says agriculture emissions are the hardest to get rid of, they're part of the natural biogenic methane cycle and they get rid of themselves. I mean, we know that. They've been doing that for millennia, you know, for literally millions of years. This has been the natural order thing. This is what nature is. And to sort of think you're going to do some sort of lab concoction creation like this company's talking about is not only, you know, not only do they disregard all the fossil fuel inputs that require to run those particular companies. That's always just kind of swept under the rug and not discussed. But we have no idea what the long-term health ramifications are. I mean, you know, if you look at how sick the population is today with regard to chronic disease, 42% obesity rate, you know, 11% diabetes rate in the U.S., 50 million people with autoimmune disease, on and on. And that's just what we've done so far with the food. And I think the food contributes to that significantly. Now we're going to double down on stupidity and go further into this direction in the sort of name of saving the planet from cow farts boiling the ocean. I mean, it's just absolutely insanity. And, you know, obviously, you know, he makes a lot of money. He's invested in these things. And of course he wants to, influence legislation that's favorable to what he's doing. You know, I know most of the ranchers are opposed to, you know, electronically, you know, tracking their cattle. I mean, the only thing I think that benefits is these larger corporations where we have the centralization of the food. And whenever there's centralization of the food, we become vulnerable as a society. You know, when a small group controls all the food, that's pretty powerful, right? And so we want a well-distributed food system where there's a lot of access to local produce, local meat, things like that. And that's clearly not in most people's interest.
Yeah, even here in Mexico, the one company started making cricket beer. By the way, you're making the studio techs out there in Australia hungry. They say that they're going to ask for some extra beef on their tacos. And
that should be part of their compensation packet, that they get extra beef as part of their paycheck. Tell them to ask for that.
Our boss is shaking his head right now. Someone in the chat says, just do the opposite of what the establishment wants, and you mostly can't go wrong. Well, we got to jump to our break. Again, the website, carnivore.diet, Revero, Revero.com. We'll be right back.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Out of the frying pan and into the fire? It looks as though that might indeed be the case. Sure, we're going to be rid of Glitch McConnell as Senate Minority Leader, at least in November, maybe. But he'll still be in the Senate until 2027, no doubt pulling the strings behind the scenes. And now there's talk that South Dakota Senator John Thune might replace him as leader of the Senate Republicans. That would be an absolute disaster, not only for the Republican Party, but for the America First agenda, and indeed for all Americans. You don't like Donald Trump? That's fine. He's not the issue. The issue is enacting legislation that's going to enshrine the America First agenda into law so that subsequent Democrat presidents can't simply undo it with the stroke of a pen. No, we need a House and a Senate that are going to start putting America ahead of other countries and start putting Americans against citizens from other countries. It's time to take care of home base. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for today's News Talk, TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's our final segment here with Dr. Sean Baker. You can check out his book, The Carnivore Diet. I'm holding up the Kindle version, and of course you can get the physical, and the website is carnivore.diet, and as well as rivero.com. Someone asks, what about butter, cheese, and dairy? I'm a huge fan of those. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that for most people it's fine. I mean, the one problem with dairy is it can be easy to overconsume. You know, the purpose of dairy is to put weight on animals, and including humans, when we're babies. And so it's an excellent source of protein, a very good source of fat. Some people have sensitivities to some of the caseins and things of that nature. So you just have to be mindful of that. But yeah, it can certainly be part of the diet. I use it kind of in a sparing fashion, almost as like obviously cooking eggs in butter is a good way to do that. Maybe shredding up some cheese over some ground beef or something like that. Those would be good uses for that. But just have to be mindful of how it affects you as far as, you know, do you overconsume it? Do you gain weight in that? I'm just laughing at the American Heart Association ad. You know, the American Heart Association, since they've been around, heart disease has not gone down. We're still seeing the number one killer. And so the advice they're putting out, I think, has not been particularly helpful. I mean, yeah, they're good at helping you to have a bypass and take drugs and stuff like that. But it's not done much to reduce the incidence of heart disease. Smoking, reductant smoking has helped a fair bit. But I mean, in general, we still have this advice that hasn't seemed to work. So I think it's time to maybe try something different.
Yeah, that leads into my next question. You're going against the grain. You're a renegade and you're getting hate and criticism. And that's usually what happens when you try to do what you're trying to do and go against these greedy forces, I will even say sinister forces of governments and corporations. How has that been, dealing with the criticism and some of the hate?
Well, the sort of the name calling and that stuff, it's kind of a sticks and stones type of thing. I've been to war. I've been an athlete. I've been punched in the face many times over the years playing sports. So that stuff really doesn't bother me that much. In fact, it just kind of fuels my drive to be successful, you know, and it's actually energizing to have all the negativity that you can sort of say, okay, well, look, I mean, for every one sort of hater I have, I probably got 100 people that are very positive and been positively affected by what I do. And it's upsetting to people because there are people that have been told and believe with all their heart and mind that a low fat plant based diet is the way, you know, it's the way, the truth and the light, so to speak, almost in a religious sort of sense. And when you start to show them evidence that maybe that's not true, they get really mad. They get upset about that. Not to mention the financial conflicts of interest. Because, you know, if everybody started eating more meat and less, even just less processed food, that would have a huge economic impact on Western society. I mean, you think about food manufacturers, drug companies, healthcare systems, they would all lose tremendous amounts of revenue. We're talking into the hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. And so there's obviously some people that don't want this to happen. You know, there's huge financial disincentives to getting people healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad that there's people like you doing what you're doing. And I've got a lot of questions, but I don't want to run out of time before asking you about your other venture, which also looks like it can help a lot of people. And I've heard you talk about it. Your goal is to treat people and not see them again versus the doctors that want us coming back for more on this subscription service. And Rivero.com is the website if you want to tell us more.
Yeah, Rivero, R-E-V-E-R-O, Rivero.com. It is a, it's We're in the United States. We're licensed in all 50 states. We have healthcare teams. We have coaching teams. We have technology. We collect data on a daily basis to give you feedback. We help you with diet and lifestyle modifications. In fact, we literally just started seeing our very first patients this month, and we're already taking people off medications that they no longer need. So our goal is to treat disease in a way that hopefully puts, you know, takes care of the root cause of the disease and not just constantly medicating and medicating the symptoms. And so that's what we're for. I mean, it's, I think there's a huge need for that at this time. And we've had really good reception. There's a lot of people that are excited about this, and we will be, you know, reaching, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people over the next coming few years. And so we can start to put a, you know, change the direction of where we're going, because, you know, you see when one out of three people has some kind of mental health disorder, and that's directly related to their physical health and their nutrition. And that's not good for the country. When you got everyone, you know, every one out of, you know, three or four people walking around is on some kind of antipsychotic med or some kind of mental health drug. That's a problem. That's a real problem. And it's no wonder everybody's mad at each other and can't handle stress and full of anxiety and anger. It's just not a good place to be.
And, you know, particularly every time I venture into the U.S., friends, family, you know, new people that I meet, it's just shocking to hear the fact that they're taking prescription drugs. And I'm like, you know, like you mentioned, for cholesterol, I don't think they should even be taking that stuff. And that needs, you know, I've been hoping for something to change, and, you know, you're working on that. Just people shouldn't, you know, you go to foreign countries, almost very few people are using this sort of stuff. It seems really worse. Ground zero is the United States. And I did want to ask you, I think in the beginning of your book, I don't recall if you actually used the term World War III, but, you know, you were in war. I just want to sort of get your thoughts on briefly how you see maybe the state of America, the state of the world. You know, there's just every day now war talk. Putin is taking a ride in his nuclear strategic bomber. The West is pounding the drums. We just got 3.5 minutes left. You know, any sort of thought on what's happening around the planet?
You know, gosh, I mean, I've had the, I won't say the fortune, but I've had the experience to see war up close as a surgeon and see the absolute just, you know, horrible tragedy that occurs when you have people that are just, you know, wrecked physically, you know, every way imaginable. And so I obviously don't want to see that. You know, it's one of those things. And I think that, you know, as long as, you know, I mean, ever since society's been around, we've had war. I mean, that's been the way of the world, unfortunately. I do think that, you know, we have a lot of profoundly unfulfilled, unhappy people for various reasons. And I mean, you know, my small part of it is maybe if we can get people better nutrition, they wouldn't be so damn crazy. And maybe we could turn down the rhetoric a little bit so we don't have everybody at each other's throat, whether either, you know, locally or globally, perhaps. But yeah, it's a very strange time. I mean, I can't remember the United States being as divided as it is in my lifetime. You know, I'm 57, so I've been around for a while, and this is the most divided I can remember it. And it's, you know, I think, unfortunately, things like social media, the mainstream media, are pouring fuel on the fire. I mean, this is the whole thing. It's just to sort of get people riled up and angry all the time, you know, and I think that's, I don't know the solution for that. I can talk about nutrition, and I think that's part of it, and I'm doing my part there. But I mean, as far as, you know, what's Vladimir Putin going to do, or what anyone, you know, whoever the next president's going to do, I don't know. I'd like their brains to work well. You know, I mean, I know one of the problems with the U.S. elections now, we're dealing with one guy who appears to be, you know, developing dementia or being, you know, demented. And so that's an issue. That's a real issue. So, gosh, hopefully we figure this out.
You should become his nutritionist. A minute and a half left. You know, any other?
Well, I mean, I'll just, you know, I did. You know, it's interesting because, you know, the funny thing about Joe Biden is he's always eating ice cream, and this rumor that he has candy everywhere, all around the Oval Office. And interestingly, people with Alzheimer's disease become profoundly desperate for sugar. I mean, this is something because their brain metabolism is such that they can no longer process energy. They have sort of insulin resistance in their brain, so they can't uptake glucose as well. So they're constantly craving extra glucose. And so it's just an interesting observation that we see that. And so whether that's what's going on with him or not, you know, I'm not his doctor, I can't say, but it's a curious sort of observation for sure. Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I think whoever the president is, they need to address this elephant in the room, is the sick population. We can't just start arguing about who's going to pay for Medicare and where we're going to put, you know, budgetary spending on healthcare. We need to stop making so many damn sick people. And that would go along with solving the problem.
About 40 seconds left. Thank you for coming on the show, Dr. Baker. And tell us everywhere we can find you, your projects, and so forth.
Yeah, so obviously if you live in the United States and you're looking for a doctor that treats root cause, try rovero.com, carnivore.diet. I'm there every day talking to people that are trying to do a carnivore diet. My social media, I'm on sort of Twitter or X at SBakerMD. I'm on Instagram at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, Baker 1967. I'm on YouTube at Sean Baker MD. Those are the places that I'm on typically.
All right. Keep up the great work. I'll be right back after the break. Thanks for being on.